Questions? Cards? I think a couple are here on the table. Aruna, do you want to start?
Speaking to this, how do I speak? Into this, can I speak into this?
Thank you.
There is a question here saying, can you hear me? There is a question saying, what do U.S. women need to know about the rape of women in Bosnia? I think what U.S. women need to know is that women are not only raped in Bosnia, they're raped in all wars and conflicts everywhere in the world, and they're raped on the street, in the homes, everywhere. But I think what you need to know also is that some of us living in Europe at that time were deeply concerned about the way in which the U.S. media had played into the lives of those women, putting cameras right onto their faces and asking them to tell their stories of rape. And we call that a second line of victimization and had tried to protest that very strongly from Europe. We also need to know that women continue to be raped in the former Yugoslavia, not only in Bosnia, but in all sides of that war. But there is no question that it was the Muslim women who were the most raped, the most victimized in that war. What you also need to know is that the women in Bosnia do not want to speak only about the rape. They want to speak about the violence done to women and children in that war, as victims of that war. And the reason why they don't want to focus on the rape is because some of them who have been trying to get asylum in Western European countries have been asked for proof of rape. I also want you to know that we in the World Council of Churches set up a fund called the Solidarity Fund, and we have a consultant who is working for us in the former Yugoslavia, identifying projects and groups who need our support, and we have been working with the women there in trying to identify what kinds of needs they want and how we can, as a global community, support them. What they also want is for a day of solidarity with the women in black. There is a very strong movement in the former Yugoslavia called Women in Black, who have been meeting in the city squares in all the big cities in Belgrade and Croatia, protesting the war and particularly the violence being done to women. And they asked us, when we visited them there, to call on global solidarity with them in that struggle. So we have launched a campaign called Thursdays in Black to not only point to the former Yugoslavia, but to point to the rape and violence to women in war situations everywhere in the world. And I hope that you will join us in this campaign, because if we wear black and we wear, or as the Australian women have done, they have beautiful badges which say, I've forgotten the words. Thursdays in Black, demanding a world without rape and violence. And this is a very positive political action, because people stop you and ask you what this is all about, and then you can participate in it. Thank you.
Speakers yesterday said the questions were helpful, even if they didn't get to answer them, because it provides the grist for their next books.
May I point out, there are wonderful folks here who are working on this in terms of solidarity, U.S. women in solidarity, and Pearl Ingram Ward, way back there. She'll talk to you about these protests and other ways to be in solidarity. She's done a lot of important work on it.
They have a whole stack of questions. I don't know how each of them might want to take hold, but that's their choice. So, Sean, do you want to...
Sure, I can start.
Start? Probably about 3 minutes, 2 minutes?
Sure.
I guess we're really saying concluding comments.
Right. Well, what I didn't say when I began is that I'm the theologian, you know, and so, you know, we always wander around in different places, and I think that's important for theologians. And what I was talking about is a part of something that I'm really working on, which has a kind of working title as The Theologian in the Factory. So I want to thank you, first of all, for these questions, because they've helped me, they'll help me figure out what are even more questions that I've already figured out that I need to answer in my ongoing work. I can't say a lot about NAFTA because I'm still reading about it and still trying to figure out what's going on, but I do share the concern that it may very well be detrimental to poor women in particular, and particularly poor women in Mexico. And I don't just mean in the short term, but I really do mean in the long term. And I think my caution for us on this is to think about this proposal, this development on the long term, not on 5 years, not even on 10, but on 15 or 20 years. And as there is a real work of justice that we don't speak about, is a different kind of sacrifice on the short term in view of the long term future. And I don't mean it. It's a dangerous, I think, notion, because women have always been the people to take up sacrifice. So we've got to reorient that so that it's not something that women simply volunteer for, because that's what we always volunteer for. But we've got to think in our communities and churches about the meaning of sacrifice on the long term. The last thing I want to say, I guess, is the questions about sound economic principles in a consumer-oriented society and the need to rethink our economic system, I think, are very important. There are a number of management efforts that are concrete, that are out there, that need to be evaluated. And I think we need to begin not so much in sketching this with profit, but what is it that we want for human persons? I think Beverly Harrison is speaking about, and I always call her Bev, you know, so especially in secret, okay. So Bev says, this concern, I think, about remembering that poverty is a structural pattern, or it's something systemic. What I want to emphasize here is that in this way, we also need to remember that our thinking about persons have to relate not only on the individual level, but in a kind of systemic way. So systemically, what do we want for individual growth and flourishing and development? Systemically, what sort of persons, systemically, what do we want for persons? And so I think if we take the person as the measure for our economic and political and technological decisions, then I think we have a little bit better standard for trying to think some of those things out.
Thank you. Bev?
Well, I have many questions. Some of them are for resources to read more. Would you see me afterwards? I'll try to help about that. I'm going to take one or two that have to do with I guess, where I was either too brief or where I must probably did the most damage. So I'll try to correct it. It was a question about the Clinton health plan being so bad. If so, what should we do? Let me say that the Clinton health plan, the point I was making is that the Clinton health plan will not consider any approach except the use of markets. Now, it's not really the use of markets. Capitalism is not, markets aren't unique to capitalism. You can use them in a lot of economies. But the point is, basically is, it's not a health plan. It is a healthcare financing plan. It's very little to do with health, and it basically lays out how it will be funded, and it gives the large insurance companies a very powerful role. The point is that the World Bank and the International Monetary Fund, as Aruna pointed out this morning, imposed these programs on third world countries in order for them to get any sort of credit. And they tell them what they have to do. Well, they've always been saying, spend less on your welfare section of your budget. That's education and health, et cetera, et cetera. But they haven't up until now said, do a cheaper thing and bring in the international insurance companies to provide your health care. And the prediction is, for good reason in the research of my friend who's writing this book, that that will be the next move. But they'll wait to see what passes here. And that's why it's important to get the best we can. And there are some positive things, particularly for women and children, in the Clinton program. It's the problem with it is when it finishes, it will be very easy to drop large sectors out, even though it is built upon a principle of universal access. And the way that is done will be because the monitoring of those who are responsible for the delivery will not be very strong.
You want to take another?
Well, somebody asked me about this moral sewer I referred to. I was quick, and I should be a little more responsible. Mary Hunt, I understand, I wasn't there. I was sitting in the next room enjoying the reimaging of Jesus. But Mary Hunt, I understand, said yesterday very loudly and clearly in the group on sexuality and alternatives that the churches were using the sexuality issues to regain control because that's where the fear is. It's not a direct quote, Mary, but I've heard you before, so I know that this is that you and I share these views, and because it allowed the churches to or the leadership, the top, to get control in a situation where the lack of understanding, the discourses about sexuality, basically from the 17th century. And I warn you, the world is not flat, and other people are learning it's not. But that situation is being used to reassert control from the top and more traditional theological and moral norms. In the meanwhile, of course, our country is being seized by a rebirth of respectable racism. Mm-hmm. I mean, racism has always been powerful, but it's becoming respectable. There's so many versions of it. The churches haven't mentioned racism internally or externally during this whole period. They haven't addressed the economic crisis, which is affecting every man, woman, and child in this situation, and reorienting our lives totally. This is the point about work. We sit there mute, morally mute. Mm-hmm. Now, the Catholic mm-hmm. bishops mm-hmm. have done on everything except these sexuality issues, God help us, where they now have embraced Operation Rescue. Randall Terry and Dan Berrigan standing with their arms around each other. I mean, that should scare you to death. And you should understand what it is that's going on and why the sexuality issues are so dangerous and obfuscating. Why they are leading us into a moral sewer. And as somebody said the other day, I am enjoying seeing the Roman hierarchy have to deal with becoming the pedophile capital of the world. And I am enjoying a lot of the other issues around sexuality. But be very careful, women, because the real victims of this, the ethnic cleansing, the leadership cleansing, will be aimed not at those who are the chief offenders, but at the liberal clergy who are offenders, male, and at gay men and lesbians. And that is already certifiable as what is going on in the churches. So, I say, a moral sewer. And if we don't start breaking the silence about this stuff, and I went to Princeton Seminary, which the president of that institution is determined to see that the Presbyterian Church remains to death's door a moral sewer. And I said these things, and everyone in the room stood up and wept. Some ran out, and others stood up and wept, and I was hugged and blessed. And somebody said, God, to hear somebody tell the truth about this church, you know, it's just more than we can bear. Well, folks, we're going to have to make more trouble before we have less. But let's get to it.
I'll conclude by saying, friends, we have work to do, and friends here before us, thank you for putting the task before us.
That was lovely. Thank you.